This is one of those stories that we know very well. I could imagine some of you following along telling the story as Madeline read it for us today. We know this story back and forth from side to side. This is a story that we are very familiar with. And any time that we're very familiar with a parable, it's easy to forget how earth-shattering it really is. I feel like I talk about this all the time. And part of that's because you guys are so biblically literate. You know your stories, right? That wasn't meant to be a joke, but you guys can laugh at it, I guess. Things like the Good Samaritan, right? We've heard that story over and over again. We forget how shocking it was to hear that Samaritan was the good guy. We've heard this story of the prodigal son so many times, we forget how backwards it is. This story makes no sense. Every single character, both sons and the father in this story, are doing things that they should not be doing. When Jesus tells this story, it makes no sense whatsoever. But we've heard it so often, we've heard the context so much that we forget what it means. I'll be honest with you, I don't really even know what prodigal means until I look it up. It's just that son that goes out doing stuff and he comes back. For a long time, I always thought prodigal meant like repentant and the coming back part. I think the prodigal is actually the off wasteful spending thing. Is that right? Yeah. So y'all don't know either. It just means that young son that got his life back together and came back. Wasteful, right? It's the off and the other part, living and spending the money on the prostitutes and the desolate living. That's what prodigal means. And he comes back. So when we hear stories like this, we have to try to figure it out and try to come to some understanding. And I think we can begin to do that by looking at what the crazy part of these characters and what they're acting and doing in the parable. That is helpful. So the first thing is to just get the very first context of why Jesus is telling this story. All the tax collectors and sinners were coming near and listening to Jesus. And the Pharisees and the scribes were grumbling and saying, "This fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them." So he tells them this parable. And Jesus actually tells three parables. So the whole context of Jesus speaking this day, telling this parable, as well as the parable of the lost sheep and the parable of the lost coin, is in response to the Pharisees and the scribes grumbling. These Pharisees and scribes, the church leaders, the good religious people, those who were doing everything that they were supposed to be doing, that were following the law, that should have been the first to be praised by the Son of God, they're grumbling that Jesus is hanging out and welcoming sinners and tax collectors. These wicked, evil people, the last that any respectable person should be hanging out with, not least of which a prophet, the Son of God. Jesus should not be hanging out with these people. And so they're grumbling and they're looking for ways that they can talk bad about Jesus. This fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them. Ugh. Do you know anybody that you don't want to eat with? Yeah. We don't really do confession in our churches very often, but you can do it in your minds. I can think of a few people that I don't want to eat with. And I'm not just talking about those other sports people that my team's going to be playing this afternoon. But, you know, they're there too, you know, hey. But I like actual grungy people. People I see walking through the parking lot. Madeline and I were going to the bookstore, and she needed new shoes. So we were out at the little at the mall there, walking around, and there's a police officer parked like up on the sidewalk of this little shopping center. Madeline says, "Why is a police officer parked there?" So I don't know, they probably have some problems with this neighborhood or something. And as we were walking along, I saw some people I wouldn't want to invite over for dinner. There are people that we don't want to eat with, and yet Jesus is eating with them. he tells these parables. The first, of course, is the parable of the lost sheep. You'll remember that one too. The shepherd has 100 sheep and one gets lost, and Jesus asks this question, what should the shepherd do? What normally does the shepherd do in this situation? Of course, he leaves the 99 and he goes and finds the one. That one sheep is worth leaving the other 99 safe where they are, huddled and herded together, doing what sheep do. But that one that is lost needs to be gone, needs to be sought after and returned. And when that shepherd finds it, he hoists it up on his shoulder and he brings it back. And he calls all of his friends and his neighbors and says, rejoice, I found my sheep. I've got 100 again. Let's have a party. And the same way with a woman who has 10 silver coins. If she loses one, she'll turn her entire house upside down just to look for the one coin. Surely the 9 is enough, but she wants that last coin, and she'll turn the house upside down, cleaning, moving the furniture out of the way. Madeline, do you remember when we moved the couch out of the way to clean out from under it? Mm-hmm. We're not looking for coins. We're usually looking for socks. Yeah. So I have a bad habit of taking my shoes and socks off at the couch, and they get stuck up underneath it. And then I also have another bad habit of, instead of finding my lost socks, I'll just buy a whole new pack of socks. So I end up with a bunch of socks. I try to get the sip. Anyways, we're talking about coins. She'll turn the entire house upside down looking for that lost coin. And when she finds it, she calls her friends and says, come, rejoice with me. Let's have a party. I found my lost coin. Let us rejoice. And at the end of both of those parables, Jesus says, just so I tell you, there is more joy in heaven over the one who has been lost and repents and comes back than of the 99 sheep or the other 9 coins. Heaven rejoices when that which is lost comes back. And so now we get to this third parable, this parable of the prodigal son and his brother. I think it was Teresa a couple years ago that pointed out which of these sons was actually lost. And that changed my understanding of this parable, so I'm going to share it with you. I'm sure I have shared it before, but I'm going to share it again. Which of these two brothers is the lost one? Well, of course, it's that younger prodigal son. As an older brother, I love this parable because it's always the younger siblings that get in the most trouble. Yeah. Right? Us older siblings, we're the responsible ones that do what we're supposed to do, that stay close to home and follow all the rules. It's that younger brother that comes to his father and says, Father, give me the share of the property that will belong to me. This is the first shocking part. We've heard this over and over again. What do you imagine this father doing? Going down to the bank and writing a check or something? This is a land-based economy. He's not just giving him a sack of coins, a bunch of money. He's selling off half of the property. Not only is he asking for his share of the inheritance, which, by the way, is basically saying, Dad, I wish you were dead. You're dead to me. Give me what I get when you die. Sell off the property. What I would get when you're dead, which I wish would come faster than it is, sell it off so that I can take my money and get out of here. That's shocking. That informs how shocking the father's response later on is. When the younger brother goes off and spends all the money and he's down in the pigsty, starving in this great famine, when he says, how many of my father's hired hands have bread enough to eat? I'll tell him, I've sinned against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. He's right. He's done everything possible to ostracize and separate himself from his father. He has no right to be called his son anymore. He's honestly risking his life, probably just showing his face around there again. He's getting what he deserves. We talked last week about how wonderful it would be if the bad folks in this world got what they deserved. He's gotten what he deserves, this thing that he's done, the sin against heaven and his father, asking for his inheritance, going and squandering it, not just spending the money. It wasn't just a bad investment deal. He's sinning. He's spending this money on things that he should not be spending his money on. And he's found himself destitute, homeless. In the service of the swineherders, there was nothing more dirty or unclean, less kosher for Jesus' people than pigs. And he's living and working with these pigs. He's so hungry, he wished that he could eat their slop. And still no one gives him anything. This is exactly what he deserves. This shocking behavior, demanding this inheritance. How dare he? Finally, God is punishing those who should be punished. Surely this younger brother will die in that faraway place. But no, he turns, he repents. Even in his own heart, he says, surely those in my father's house, even his slaves, his hired hands, have enough to eat and even enough to spare. I can go back to that place and at least eat. I'm not worthy to be his son, but I can at least stay alive. And so he sets back off and he returns to his father. And this is the next crazy part that makes no sense. The father, I wonder if the father has been sitting by the window, watching down the road, waiting for his son to return. Longing for that son to return. The heartbreak, longing and wishing for him to return. Now, Jesus' hearers would have thought and expected the father to go out, well, not to go out, but when they first saw the son, to like punch him in the face or something. Wish him dead. He's already said, Father, I wish you were dead. Here now is this father's chance to say it back to his son. You are no son of mine. Keep walking. Yeah, we've got plenty of food. I take care of mine and my own, but you are not in our clan anymore. You are not a part of this family. Keep on going. This is what should happen. This is what the younger brother deserves, and yet the father throws his arms around him, kisses him, gives him this big, huge welcome. My, oh my, what an odd, crazy thing. This is not how the father is supposed to act. I want you to imagine you're in that crowd. You've got your time machine. You go back in time. You find Jesus telling this parable and look around at the people around you. Their jaws are on the floor. This makes no sense. This is not how earthly fathers respond to their sons. This is not how God is supposed to sound and respond to those who harm God so much. But the father calls those hired hands and he says, bring out a robe, the best one, put it on him, the ring on his finger, sandals on his feet, get the fatted calf. We're going to throw the biggest party because my son who was dead is alive and has returned home. He was lost and he is found. Let us celebrate. That's where we want it to end. Because then that, again, gives us what we want. That younger brother is the one who was lost. That younger brother who has been the one out living this destitute life has come back. And God has welcomed him home. The Father has welcomed him home. How wonderful an image to imagine that no matter how far we go in this life, God will welcome us back. Growing up, I'll tell you, that was always who the keynote speaker at the youth things was. It was always some guy that had been out doing crazy stuff, and he found the Lord and said a prayer one time and turned his life around, and now he was the preacher. It was a great story. We did go to these conferences, these big, huge worship services. That was always, they seemed to find the like worst possible person 10 years ago that turned their life around, and that was supposed to be inspiring. This is great. Knew a guy, he was like, oh, it doesn't matter. I can't tell his story. But he was living rough. And then there he was, all fixed. God welcomes us back. This is great. That's not why Jesus has told these parables. Remember, it's the tax collectors and the sinners who are eating with Jesus when the Pharisees and the scribes come up grumbling. It's the good religious folks. Because Jesus keeps telling the story. And now there's an elder son, an older brother. That's me. I'm the older brother. I did everything right. The other thing that these youth keynote speakers would talk about were their come to Jesus moment, right? They're living off in destitute. They've got their stories of living with the pigs and feeding, longing, and then all of a sudden they hear this voice from God and they turn and they become these itinerant ministers. Every single one of them had this call story. And here I am, the older son, always been to church. You know my dad's a minister, right? You know that his mother, my grandmother, worked at the regional campground in Florida. She was at the first CYF high school camp down in Florida that first year that it was there. It's about 75 years ago at this point. Like, I was at church before I was a twinkle in my mother's eye, right? It's youth Sunday, but I gotta check my words, right? I was at church forever. In our membership class, we asked, why do we go to church? And I joked, because grandma makes us, right? Because dad makes us. Like, yeah, that's part of the reason I'm here. We went to church every Sunday, whether we wanted to or not. Every Sunday. Went to camp since I was in third grade. Was a counselor since at least fifth grade, I'm pretty sure. Might have been eighth grade, I don't know. I am this older son. I have been slaving away for the Lord always. I am these Pharisees and these scribes, doing what I can day in and day out to live my life the way that God would have me to live. And here are those younger brothers, having a good time too. When you're the older brother and you see the younger brother's pictures on Facebook and all the partying and all the things that they're doing, it looks like a lot of fun, doesn't it? Here I am doing what I'm supposed to do, trying to be in bed on time, waking up early, and they're out having a good time. And turns out God is just as happy with them when they turn around and make it back. Woo! I wish Jesus would have stopped telling this story when the younger son got back. Remember I said Teresa changed my understanding of this parable. With the lost sheep, how do you know which sheep is lost? The shepherd goes and finds it. The coin that is lost, the woman turns the house over looking for it. Which of these brothers is lost? Which son does the father run out to go find? It is this older brother who is lost. For some reason, the father seems to understand that his younger son will be back one day, and he's preparing to welcome him back. You don't just have a fatted calf lying around. He's preparing for this younger son to return. He's kept the robe in good shape. He's kept the ring in a safe place, knowing that that younger brother would be back and they would celebrate. The father knows that that younger brother will be back. It is the elder son, the oldest, the one who has done everything that he is supposed to do that's lost. The father runs out in search of him. This older brother that has heard the party and understood that his younger brother is back, and all of a sudden, instead of being filled with joy and rejoicing like the father, he's filled with jealousy and hatred. His mind and his heart are full of hate. The father runs out to find him. It is this older son who has been lost. I said I wish that Jesus would stop the story when the younger son gets back, and I don't actually like where Jesus ends the parable. Because he ends with the father saying, "Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours, but we had to celebrate and rejoice because this brother of yours was dead and has come to life. He was lost and has been found." The end. We don't know if that older brother goes and rejoins the party. That's our choice. I've said it before, you're all here today. You're the older brothers. You might have been a younger brother at some point, but you're here now. You're doing what is expected of you. You're worshiping. You're bringing donations. You're putting money in the offering plate. You're going to be gathered around this table. We are all in this place, the elder son. Jesus, the Father, asks if we're going to come and celebrate those who are lost that have returned to God. Or are we going to be like those Pharisees and those scribes and that older brother, filled with hatred and jealousy, and continue inward, looking for ourselves and turning aside at those who come back to God? The story ends. We don't know what that elder son did. We know that some of the Pharisees and the scribes continued with their hateful ways. We know that some of them turned back to God and to Christ. Where are we going to end this story? Amen.